This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Big data is being collected in a constant, never-ending stream. It's coming in from everywhere all the time. Sure, it's a treasure trove of information, of knowledge, but manipulating that data so that it can be sifted through, analyzed, and understood has become increasingly difficult. Big data has grown beyond the capabilities of commonly used data analysis software and has exploded from a few dozen terabytes in size in 2012 to several, and I think I'm saying this right, petabytes of data today. Tomorrow, next week, next year, who knows? That is why experts are scrambling not only to make sense of all this data, but to design systems and train the next generation to do so. UNC Charlotte has a data science and business analytics program, which has been described as vital for the region and transformative for the university. And we're going to talk about that and get an idea of how this might work, as well as the impact it has in real-world applications, big data, that is. Dr. Richard Buttimer is Associate Dean for Faculty, Research, and Graduate Programs in the Belk College of Business and a professor of finance there. The college is part of a new professional science master's program in data science and business analytics. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I appreciate you being here.
Well, nice to have you here. Mark Armstrong is an 11-year veteran of the College of Computing and Informatics at UNC Charlotte with over 25 years in the IT domain. Thank you for joining us.
I appreciate it, Mike. Glad to be here.
Dr. Christopher Blanchett, PhD, is Associate Dean for Research, Director of Data Sciences and Business Analytics, and an Associate Professor of Public Health Sciences with the College of Health and Human Services at UNC Charlotte. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And a non-academic with a shorter title, Sean Cassidy, not the singer, is Vice President and General Manager of Premier Informatics Emerging Business Unit. He's responsible for the company's data warehousing, advanced analytics, and population health technology business, which we'll all get into as we go through the program. Thank you for being here as well.
Good morning, Mike.
I just quoted you, I believe, Dr. Buttimer, as having said that UNC Charlotte's new data science and business analytics initiative is vital for the region and transformative for the university. How so?
Well, in several ways. First of all, there's no business or large public sector organization that's not involved with big data. Everybody has to do it now because we're all collecting the data. And every organization has to use that data because if they don't, their competitors are. So it's important for everything from the financial services industry to medical care to retail. Virtually any industry that's important in Charlotte is involved in this. It's transformative for the university because it's requiring a depth of knowledge and a breadth of knowledge that is unlike other sorts of endeavors we've had in the past. So if you look at our data science and business analytics program, it's actually the combination of three different colleges within the university, which is pretty rare. You don't see that in academic organizations that often. So it's the Belk College of Business is one of the partner colleges. Our College of Computing and Informatics is one of the other colleges involved, as well as our College of Health and Human Services. In the degree program that we've just launched, the Professional Science Masters in Data Science and Business Analytics, is a joint program between all three colleges. That's really unique, and it transforms the university.
Because you're going to be working on helping health organizations learn to use big data more effectively. That's one practical application. There could be there are thousands of practical applications, but we're going to use that as an example because of this triumvirate of powerhouses at the university here. And Mark Armstrong, you have said that the competition gap is already widening between companies and organizations that make good use of big data and those who do not.
That's correct. We're from a big data perspective, we're on the early stages of the hockey stick growth curve. Mm. The early adopters got out there. They started looking typically at using big data to look at their past performances. The folks that are really beginning to see huge changes, competitive advantages, are already looking to take the data, big data, bring it in real time, do analysis so they can respond faster, as well as doing predictive analytics, models and simulations of what they can do going forward.
And when you say predictive, and we'll get into this perhaps later on, but there's so much ground to cover, I'm not sure that we will, so let's do it now. when you say predictive, they are hoping to be able to take this steady stream of data and predict what you, the consumer, will do next or will want to buy next or be interested in next. Should I be creeped out by that?
Well, I think the thing you need to recognize is firms have been doing this for a very long time. We may not have had the same amount of data, and so we may not have been as good at it. But, you know, your bank has been trying to figure out for decades what you're going to do next. Every time you
and whether or not I'm a good risk.
Absolutely. So when you would go in and fill out an old mortgage application, there was somebody in the bank that was sitting there trying to figure out, are you going to default on that loan? We've been trying to do that for a long time. And as we all found out in 2008, if we're not particularly good at that, really bad things happen in society. So what we have to look at is, as we gather this data, it's letting us do a better job at things we've already been trying to do. Mm-hmm. And that's what big data and the predictive analytics is really about.
Because of the gravitas of the university and its programs in this arena and some other organizations around town, I believe that the goal here is to try to make Charlotte a big data hub, or one of the country's big data hubs, which leads me to a question for Sean Cassidy. Why are you here? Why is Premier – no, why is Premier here? Why not Silicon Valley? Why not to Redmond, Washington, where Microsoft?
Well, it's actually a great question. I mean, we're in Charlotte. We've been in Charlotte traditionally. We've actually formed over 30 years ago, and the sort of the company as it stands today has been around for about 20 years. So we've had a presence in Charlotte for a long time. Our informatics business, our analytics business, has also been around for a long time, and we've just established a footprint here. But what we're finding, Mike, is that we are struggling in some cases to attract talent, to find talent, and that's why we're so excited about the work that the university is doing, because we need more people who can do data science and informatics and advanced analytics. And so we are very supportive of the program, and we're trying to be as involved as we can in the program in order to attract talent to Premier.
This is almost like the healthcare industry with nurses, because we know there's going to be a shortage of nurses going forward. And
right.
If Obamacare is successful, there'll be more people using the healthcare system than ever before. So the shortage will be worse than ever before. And although there may be a talent gap today, according to you, Mark, there's a huge gap approaching.
Yes. They expect within the next 4 to 5 years to be short 150,000 to 200,000 deep analytic technical users. But more importantly, we'll be missing something on the order of 1.5 million to 2 million managers who can actually make data-driven decisions based on the results of the analysis.
Yeah, I guess we should talk a little bit about personnel and about why the shortage is even a problem, because there's so much data. Only computers can manipulate that data and analyze that data. So what do the humans do? I mean, it's a stupid question.
Well, no, and it's interesting when you say only computers can do the analysis. In fact, it's the humans who do the analysis. The computers facilitate the analysis.
Ah.
And so what we need are people with critical thinking skills who can actually take an idea and a hypothesis and actually implement that, actually go and examine the data and find out whether there's any truth.
So they have to be able to understand what they're looking for in order to tell the computer how to do what it needs to do to spit out the information they want to know.
Yeah, in our business in healthcare, it starts with some kind of a problem. So, for example, a doctor observes that they're doing too many C-sections. He just has an idea. I think we're doing too many C-sections. And so then they assign an informaticist or a data scientist to go look at the data and determine, okay, what is the profile of C-sections? When are we doing them? Why are we doing them? How are we doing them? And that requires a tremendous amount of thought and thinking. First of all, you have to understand the terminology that you're dealing with. You know, medicine is so jargon-rich, right?
Right?
There's no other industry quite like it. And then you have to have the ability to be able to interpret that problem in terms of the data and come up with some kind of an answer that you can actually verify. And then, once you think you've found a nugget of truth, you have to be able to articulate that to leaders and get them to actually buy into there's some action that we should take. So all of that requires a tremendous scope of skill, technical, computer science skill, and the ability, obviously, to communicate effectively and think critically.
Just to give people an idea of how big data in general is, eBay, I don't even know what a – is it a petabyte? Is that what that is? Mm-hmm. What is that? How big is a petabyte?
Petabytes, what, petabyte. 1,000 terabytes. So
okay. 1,000. So if you have a 1 terabyte hard drive,
yeah.
This is 1,000 of those drives.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
And how much information is that? I have a terabyte hard drive and I can't fill it up. So
I think when you start thinking about filling up stuff, it depends on the data and what you're putting in there. When you start looking at imaging data, that starts eating up a lot of memory. So if you think from a hospital or a healthcare agency, MRI scans, take up a lot of memory. And so when you start thinking about all the MRI scans that are being done, all the x-rays that are being done, all the imaging data that's collected, now you start to think about, I don't know, Premier's hospitals. What do you have, 390, 400, 600 hospitals?
3,000 community
3, hospitals. 3,000
hospitals. 60% of the market.
Right. Yeah. So 3,000 hospitals. And you think about every MRI, every x-ray that's being done in those hospitals, aggregate that up and drop it into one box.
Wow. So eBay has a 90 petabyte warehouse of information. In 2005, this is a long time ago in data years, Amazon.com had the world's three largest Linux databases. Walmart handles more than 1 million customer transactions per hour, which they then send to databases that are now so large that they contain 167 times the information to be found in the Library of Congress. Facebook has 50 billion user photographs on hand on its servers. Before it was possible to collect all of this information, we seemed to get along pretty well in the world. Why do we need all this information now? What are we gaining from it? What's the upside? Because there's a lot of creepy downside to this. What's the upside of it?
A lot of it's driven by demand, right? So the demand of having something very quickly. Facebook's a good example. You can start to – you can interface with your friends in real time, immediate response. It's driving the customer's demand. So they start to demand that same type of activity across all other industries. In healthcare, we see the same demand, right? So demand to know how am I doing, what am I doing. Physicians are starting to demand, you know, how do I know my patient's going to be readmitted? What can I do today? What can I do right now in this minute?
And is the demand also being in the healthcare industry also being driven by the fact that we're trying to lower healthcare costs? And until we get a handle on all this information that physicians and hospitals and nurses take in every day, we can't lower the cost.
Yeah, I think in healthcare, it's been an industry that's been looked at in more of a fee-for-service model. So I perform a service today, I get paid today. And now with the Affordable Care Act, we're starting to think more longitudinally about what's going on in healthcare. And now you start to think about, okay, what am I treating you today to get paid today? But actually, I need to make sure that you're going to hit certain milestones over a period of time for payment as well.
And when the president and others who have talked about healthcare and keeping costs down and making it more affordable and not bankrupting the country, they've repeatedly come back to the need to digitize or electronically manipulate patient information as opposed to putting them in those color-coded folders that take up rooms of space in a doctor's office. Is that part of this big data stream?
It is, but it's the first step. So the first step is to take paper charts and put it and digitize it. The next step is to make that information useful. So
there are, I'm sorry, but there are those people who are afraid of that because they think their medical information needs to be private and they feel that it's more private if it's siloed on a piece of paper in a file cabinet someplace than it is if it's floating around on the internet as an electronic file. Are they right? Are those concerns valid?
I think the concerns are valid. I mean, there have been notable cases recently where millions of healthcare records, which are subject to very significant government controls and regulations, have gotten out into the public domain. And can be used for nefarious purposes. People should be worried about that, but they should also recognize that healthcare providers and organizations like Premier are incredibly focused on data security and protection.
We're going to talk more about big data and specifically how it refers to the healthcare industry in a moment. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and UNC Wilmington Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship, presenting a Coastal Connect Entrepreneur and Capital Conference, September 4th at Coastline Conference and Event Center in Wilmington. Register at uncw.edu/CIE. Anna Joyner spent most of her life as an environmentalist who grew up roaming the hills and mountains of western North Carolina. Well, she also grew up as the daughter of the founder of a megachurch whose beliefs do not include climate change. She and her father joined us back in May for a really interesting conversation about the clash that came to the attention of producers at the Showtime Network who included them in their show on the topic of climate change. It's an interesting conversation. We will revisit it Monday at 9.
Thank you. On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. House Republicans warn President Obama about executive action on immigration. Primaries are held in 4 states, and Burger King plans to move its headquarters to Canada.
That's the Friday News Roundup on the Diane Rehm Show, coming up next from 10 to noon on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about big data, specifically big data at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte, big data in the healthcare universe, and more with Dr. Richard Buttermer, who is Associate Dean I'm not sure I can do this with my abbreviations here. Associate Dean for Faculty Research and Graduate Programs at the Belt College of Business at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. Also with us, Mark Armstrong, Data Science Business Analytics Industry University Coordinator there. Dr. Christopher Blanchett, Associate Dean of Research in the College of Health and Human Services at UNC Charlotte, and John Cassidy, a VP and General Manager of the Emerging Business Unit at Premier Informatics. They're a big data collection firm that specializes, I take it, in the healthcare industry.
Yep.
Big data experts refer to the three V's: volume, velocity, and variety. More information is coming in at unprecedented levels and unprecedented speed on a variety of topics in a variety of formats. That's the challenge, isn't it? Learning how to read it, speak it, synthesize it, make sense of it.
Absolutely, that's the challenge. And I think it's the opportunity as well. One of the things that's happening now throughout all businesses, certainly healthcare, but other businesses as well, is the notion that you're now able to take data that previously was isolated, and you can bring it together to help form a fuller picture of whatever business problem or consumer behavior it is you're trying to understand and to model. So it's the variety of data that for a lot of organizations is really what's driving innovation and being able to deliver goods and services.
The digitalization of the world has really transformed the world in many ways in just a few short years, and it certainly changed a lot of businesses. The music business is pretty much gone because of the digitalization of all this. What impact will this have, do you think, on the healthcare industry?
Well, I think with healthcare, we're going to start to see, hopefully, more efficiency in healthcare. We're going to start to see more real-time action, decisiveness in decision-making, treatment options, treatment choices. Right now, a lot of the treatment choices are made very ad hoc. What have I done as a provider? What have I treated you? What did my patient population look like? Now I'm going to start to harness the power of the data and look at what is millions of patients responded to.
Will individual physicians have the ability to do this, or will they have to hire a Premier or some other organization or a university researcher to teach them how to ask the right questions or have a staff of people who know how to ask the right questions?
Well, they do have a staff. I mean, today, a lot of the people who are interacting with electronic data in physicians' offices are not physicians. They're physicians' staffs and nurses. And so the idea is, again, that data needs to be synthesized and elevated to a level where a physician can actually make it actionable.
So how do you keep it protected under the HIPAA requirements if you have non-physicians looking at my personal medical information?
Well, the HIPAA rules actually allow folks in a physician's office to interact with your data, but you don't have the ability to be able to really go beyond that. And so I think you'll find, without going and getting too pedantic about it, that the rules are actually quite strict around the usage. And you have to give your express consent. We've probably all done it at times for other people, even family members, to be able to look at our data.
We've been talking about this enormous amount of information that's coming in a steady stream all day, every day, 24/7, and that's big data. It's a big buzzword, you say, Sean, but the majority of providers, you say, have not even mastered their small data. So,
yeah, I mean, it's funny to me, and I've gone to a few conferences and spoke about big data and used that sort of exact expression that they haven't mastered their small data. And what we mean by that is that, the electronification of healthcare records and the instrumentation of healthcare process is a relatively recent phenomenon. Obviously, the financial systems have been in place for a long time, Mike. You would expect that. I mean, you have to collect bills, right? Make payment, collect payments, and so on. So the problem is that there's all this data that's locked in silos, and we can't get after it. So, for example, you go to your primary care physician, they'll collect data about you. Then let's say a couple of weeks later, you have to go into the ER because you're having chest pains. Okay? the ER docs have no idea that you're in your primary care physician a couple of weeks before, and maybe they'd seen something in an EKG or whatever mm-hmm. that may have given them pause. And so what we've got to do is unlock the data from the silos, bring it together, and give care teams, give physicians the ability to be able to see it and use it to deliver care.
Is that something that you at Premier and you at the university in the healthcare area of this big data I don't know even what to call it, paradigm, are working on?
It is. It is. It's something that we are working on. But as Sean said, the difficulty is a lot of the rules and privacy that you have to get through to be able to connect the data from disparate sources.
So how would you do this? Create a kind of Facebook for physicians? I mean, seriously, where you're all of your information goes to some central storage location, and if you are a patient, I enter your super secret number, probably your Social Security number, and I'm able to access all of your dental and medical records at one place at one time. Is that the goal here?
That's the future. That's the hope. I think there's a lot of barriers and hurdles.
So if you're in a foreign country or if you live in Charlotte and you're on vacation in San Francisco and you have an emergency and you're sent to the emergency room, they'll be able to go, and there you are on the screen.
Yeah, and it's actually that actually happens in Europe. So there's a lot of European nations that have centralized healthcare and one-payer systems so that you have a credit card type card that can be swiped on any terminal that you walk into a healthcare delivery system and all your records are there. We're not there based on our competitive nature in the U.S. where we need to enable different attributes and different organizations to compete on different activities. It's created a disparate environment.
I guess this is what they were talking about 20 years ago when they said we're entering an information age and that information is going to be the currency of the time. I know that the General Assembly has begun an investment in what they called game-changing research at the university that they say, this is coming from the legislature now, that they say will drive jobs and talent here, and it's why they have determined that data science and business analytics will be their number one program for legislative funding in the coming years. And the university has made it a top priority as well. Is that why? Because the money's coming in?
Actually, it's the other way around. Okay. The chancellor is investing significant amounts of his personal investment resources into this. He's defined the DSBA, the Data Science Business Analytics Initiative, as the number one goal for the university. We've looked out. We see the fact that across all industries, and we've been talking about healthcare and finance, but across all industries, including retail, supply chain logistics, everything that touches anything in business now requires business analytics, big data, and we don't have enough people. So the university is establishing itself as the premier regional and eventually one of the primary national hubs for data analytics. We have an example, a previous history doing this. A few years ago in the energy industry, they realized that a significant portion of their engineers were going to be retiring. So nothing they could do, no talent coming in. So they established the EPIC Center, the Energy Production Information Center, Infrastructure Center.
At the university.
At the university. It's there. It's done in partnership with the companies in the energy industry. Mm-hmm. We're now producing research and materials, approaches, and most importantly, we're producing students who can become the employees of these companies.
And this really is something that happens in consultation with our partners throughout the Charlotte region. So it's not like we sit around one day and say, well, here's a great idea. Let's just go start a big data project. What happens is we spend, everybody from the chancellor to the deans to people in my role, we spend a lot of time talking with people in industry and leadership roles in government within the Charlotte region. And what we saw was there was a need for people in this area. And we were able to see 4 or 5 years ago that this big data was an emerging issue. And you could very easily see that with companies like Premier and Charlotte, the banks, the large retailers, every single one of them was coming back and saying the same thing. We need people that have the technical skills to do big data analysis, but also the industry-specific skills, so be it business or healthcare. And so that is what has driven us as an institution to start the Big Data Initiative. It's really a response to and in partnership with the Charlotte region.
You know, a lot of the stories that you've said, and I think the last program that we did on big data, which was several years ago, it was focused on the big brother aspect of big data. And a lot of it is organizations like Facebook collecting all kinds of information about us that we are voluntarily giving to them, and some that we're not voluntarily giving. We're just being tracked in our daily lives by the computers out there in the sky. But it's more than that. It is being able to tell companies what's going on within their own company to save them money. We're talking a lot about healthcare, but UPS has a lot of data, 16 petabytes of data, on their vehicle, on just how their vehicles work. 46,000 vehicles keeping track of their speed, their direction, their braking, their drivetrain performance, and as a result, they've saved 8.4 million gallons of fuel by cutting 85 million miles off of the driving daily routes of the drivers, which is an enormous savings for UPS. In your work, Dr. Blanchett, you are developing methods of linking large-scale databases, some of which you've already talked about here, so hospitals and healthcare professionals can better understand what you call the patient's journey through the healthcare system. What does that mean?
Yeah, so it's what we've been talking about. It's basically the patient, and Sean talked about this a little bit, where you go to one physician, one provider, you go to another, you go to your pharmacy, you go wherever. Everybody has different data sources. None of them talk to each other. So it's really coming up and trying to use the data on the back end to link those data sets to give that patient, that full patient perspective. And we have some of that through health insurance organizations now. Every time you do something, interact with the healthcare system, there's a transaction that's then sent to your health insurance company, which ends up being a fairly good source. But the problem with that is it only really collects billing data. It doesn't collect clinical data. So it doesn't give decision makers the ability to make decisions that can then change the course of your treatment. And what we're doing is we're trying to link different data sets, clinical data, billing data, all of that, to give the perspective of the full patient journey, or what you do over time in your healthcare, and put that in the hands of the providers that can then make the right treatment choices for you.
The idea of some of this information going into the hands of insurance companies used to be scary, because you used to be able to be turned down for pre-existing conditions, and you can no longer. So that has that removed a lot of resistance to this information?
Well, and I think there's two aspects of that. So one is, right, you could think about restrictions to access and restrictions to treatments and so forth. The other is that it allows the insurance company to understand what you might need in the future, which is where we get into prescriptive analytics. Mm-hmm. So we've talked about predictive analytics. What is it that you may do in the future? Prescriptive analytics ends up being focused on, if I give you this treatment, how will you perform in the future? So health insurance companies can use the information to set up disease management programs, to help enroll patients into a disease management program where they get more attention than that they may need now.
There's a bit of a big data arms race that's sort of happening, and it relates to the current dynamic in healthcare, which, as Chris alluded to, is this transition from a fee-for-service to a more value-based world. So you think about it, you know, payers, you pay an insurance premium, and a healthcare payer, an insurance company, then wants basically for you to consume, you know, as little healthcare as possible, right? So because they're basically rent-seeking entities. Well, as providers are being forced to take more risk, then they have to understand, you know, better, you know, what's happening broadly with patient care. So they're looking for broader data sets. They're looking for a lot more insight into the data, the kinds of insights that traditionally payers have had. And that's why we're seeing providers now beginning to make such heavy investments in big data infrastructure and analytics. Otherwise, they won't be able to keep up with the payers. And frankly, they need to.
Let me see here where I want to go next. Oh, it's one thing to have your information collected by your physician and put in a computer someplace and make that available to other physicians at will. That's one thing. But evidently, if I'm correct about this, Dr. Blanchett, the healthcare industry not only wants to collate all of the information that it collects to make available to those who may need it professionally, but they add that to that information. They want to add patient-reported data from Facebook and Twitter feeds. So I'm on Facebook and I'm saying, you know, I had heart palpitations this morning. I'm telling the world that on my Facebook feed. That is not a wise thing to do, it seems to me. You guys are farming this stuff.
Well, I think it depends on the perspective. So if the perspective is to help the patient, if you think about how much time did you have to talk to your physician? 10 minutes, 15 minutes? But your Facebook, how much do you interact with your Facebook account? A lot of people, spend lots and lots of time of their day interacting with Facebook and telling about what my symptoms are. You know, you might see pictures, which you don't want to see. But you end up using that as an outlet to talk. And when you talk to your physician, you're giving a report. You're giving a history of how your symptoms are and what you've experienced. But really, it ends up being very short amount of time. So if you think about linking all your clinical data, linking all of your billing data that we can see, but then you start thinking about linking all of your reported impact on symptoms and outcomes.
So how would that – first of all, how is that not unlike eavesdropping on a dinner conversation?
Right.
But secondly, how do you collect that data? How do you get access to it and collect it?
Yeah, so a lot of it is in aggregate right now. So a lot of it is when you start linking or you think about linking, you're not linking Joe Smith to Joe Smith. You're not linking two people or the same person. You're linking people that look alike. So what ends up happening is you're linking controls and cases and people that look like very similar to help get some perspective on how you may treat someone that comes in the hospital, right? So that's one area. That's kind of where we are now.
So if I'm talking about my symptoms on Facebook or Twitter, you're not connected.
There's nobody that I know right now that's doing that. Where providers will go first, actually, Mike, in terms of looking at social media, is they're actually going to look at their own reputations of their organization. So they're going to be examining what are people saying about my healthcare organization or my practice or my clinic on Facebook and Twitter and so forth. And just like the airlines do and just like retailers do, they're going to react to those kinds of comments.
I would point out there is an emerging area in public health that looks at social media as a way of identifying emerging issues in the general public health. There's a story I read last week about with the Ebola outbreak in West Africa. There was a group in Boston, I forget which hospital it was at, that was doing analytics of Twitter and Facebook and other social media sites that identified the emergence of a hemorrhagic fever in that part of Africa 9 days before the World Health Organization came out and said there's an Ebola outbreak. Mm-hmm. So, yes, there's a little bit of a – I understand the concern about a creepiness aspect, but if it allows you to manage something like an Ebola outbreak very early, much faster than traditional sort of public health surveillance techniques – yeah, I think a lot of people in society are willing to make that trade-off.
So if you mine these Twitter feeds, you can mine them for all kinds of things, but they're kind of like a canary in the coal mine.
Exactly.
If you're paying attention and know what to look for and know how to put it together.
Right? And you think about the case that Richard just cited, that is a general observation of a condition that was derived from social media. There was nothing specific about that. It wasn't about looking at Mike Collins' Facebook page and determining that Mike's having heart palpitations. I think we're miles and miles away from
that. It's a long way away.
Yeah. And I'm glad to hear you.
Sean
Cassidy is Vice President and General Manager of the Emerging Business Unit at Premier Informatics. Dr. Richard Buttermer's with us from UNC Charlotte, along with Dr. Christopher Blanchette, and also Mark Armstrong, all three with the university, because they have a major thrust going in data analysis and creating the next generation of people who are capable of taking this to the next level. We're going to take a break, come back with more of Big Data in a moment. Stay with us. We'll know you're gone because we're mining our feeds. We're mining them. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and D-Day Normandy 1944, now showing in IMAX at Discovery Place. Audiences of all ages, including new generations, will discover how this historic event changed the world. Tickets at discoveryplace.org. It's Friday. That means the weekly news roundup is next on the Diane Rehm Show at 10 o'clock. Among the stories they'll be talking about, House Republicans warning President Obama about executive action on immigration, primaries being held in four states, and Burger King announcing plans to move its headquarters to Canada to avoid taxes. That's special. Just a couple of the topics they'll be talking about in the first hour of the International Hour at 11. And if you'd like to join our conversation, now's the time. Email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. We're coming right back.
Hi, this is David Greene. Now, many of you know my voice really well. Some of you probably wake up to me. I mean, who knew that one of the perks of this job was all this pillow talk? Well, since you and I are close, I'm going to make a bold suggestion. When it's time to unload your current car, instead of trading it in, why don't you donate it to this station? Believe it or not, we can turn it into Morning Edition, All Things Considered, or Radiolab. It's easy. Here's how.
Call 1-866-789-8627.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about big data, about a thrust at the university level and actually at the General Assembly level to fund the university so they can create this next generation of data analytics, both people and systems. And the implications of doing so are enormous for the university, for the state, for the region. And we're talking with three professionals from the university and one in private business. That would be Sean Cassidy, who's with Premier Informatics. Your company has been collecting and analyzing information for healthcare entities now for years, which allows them to compare their performance to other similar organizations around the country by aggregating and analyzing data on one in every three U.S. hospital discharges, for instance. What are you looking for? What are hospitals looking for in that information?
We're looking for variations in performance, simply put, Mike. So, what we're trying to do when we do comparison across healthcare organizations is we're trying to determine whether that, some are using more supplies, more blood, doing more procedures, using more labor, using more inputs and potentially getting either equivalent or worse outcomes as a result. We're effectively looking for variation.
So when you discovered this, how is that information then used?
Well, and that's the interesting part, right? It's not the idea that we're just interpreting the data and we're producing some kind of report and saying to a provider, have a nice day, you've got some sort of an issue, right? What you've got to do is you've got to translate that into action. And so part of what we do, not trying to put a sales pitch out here, but part of what we do is to try to take that information and help our providers deal with the organizational and operational change management associated with, we've got to come to grips with the fact that there's variation here. We've got an embedded process. It's difficult to change. So how do we get clinicians and managers and folks to actually change their behavior? We facilitate that process.
And you are training people at the university level to be able to do this and take it to the next step up, whatever that step may be. What kinds of people are best suited for that? Are they computer people? Are they people who are interested in healthcare in this instance? Or if you're doing something for UPS, they're interested in trucking? What kind of people are these people that would be attracted to this field and be good at this?
I'd say, first of all, they're smart and, of course, good-looking people. But, what really winds up happening
– That's why I'm in it. I don't know.
But of course,
that's why this is on the radio.
That's right.
That's right.
But really, what you want to bring in is people that have an interest in both the technology and the capability to do the technology, but also have the breadth of knowledge within the specific industry that they're interested in. Whether it's somebody going into healthcare, somebody going into finance, somebody going into retail management, what you really have to have, and what this big data phenomenon is requiring, are people that have what we call a T-shaped profile. They have to have very broad knowledge of a lot of things. They've got to be good at technology. They've got to be good at managing people. They've got to be good at business processes. And they need to be really, really deep in at least one of those areas. So you really have to have people that have a tremendous breadth and depth of knowledge and interest. And that's what we're looking for in the students that we're bringing in to both the professional science master's degree and our graduate certificate in data science and business analytics.
Hmm. This is not something that you, as a 5-year-old, say, I want to grow up and be this. So at what point in your life, in a student's life, would they realize that this might be either of interest or a good fit?
When you can see the kind of money you can make doing it, I assume that has an impact.
Yeah. How much money can you make?
Hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Is it too late to change careers? Seriously, is the sky the limit here on terms of what you can take out of this?
Sure, absolutely. And I think in terms of the question, when do people start thinking they want to do this? I assume there are probably some kids in high school hopefully listening today that are thinking, gee, this sounds like something I'd want to do.
Well, if they're listening today, that means they're not in school, and therefore they will not be at the university.
That may be a
good point. If you're listening right now, we don't want you.
Yes. But I think it's certainly the case you see a lot of people, once they become college students, that's the optimal time to start figuring this out and starting to get that broad base of information. So you've got to get the training in both computer science and the math and statistics and then within the particular industry that you really want to focus on.
There are people who go into computer science who want to do programming. You know, they want to sit in a cubicle and they want to write software. And there's nothing wrong with that. Software is powering our world right now.
Right.
We are looking for people who have those kinds of skills, who enjoy communicating, enjoying, you know, sort of their lateral thinkers. They enjoy problem solving at a level that goes way beyond figuring out how to take a requirement and turning it into Java code.
But that's part of it, isn't it? I mean, to be able to analyze this data, you have to be able to write code.
Well, you have to be able to manipulate technology to get what you want, right? And so some of it involves what might look like coding, but the tools that are available now are pretty sophisticated. And so there are statistical analysis and visualization and discovery tools that make it easier for you to get after the data. You need to build a competency in how to use those tools, but we can't emphasize enough that it is the ability to translate the hypothesis or the problem statement into some kind of action, right, that you do with those tools and then figure out how to interpret the results and then translate that into language that is accessible to people who don't necessarily understand what you're talking about.
Go ahead. So, and that's another area that we've seen that people that have been in there, that they have context knowledge. Healthcare is a good example. We have a lot of healthcare practitioners that have been in the environment. They see the problems and challenges, and they also see what they could do. And so that's the other part. So we have some people that are very technical, computer science, that come in and they want to apply that to different industries. But then we have the other part where we have people that are within those industries that want to come back and get the technical capabilities as well.
And you have said, Sean, and I want to come over to Mark in a second, but you have said, Sean, that it's not just about doing statistical modeling or analysis, but about bringing together data from very different sources, evaluating its quality, and harmonizing it.
Mm-hmm.
I like that last phrase, harmonizing.
Yes.
What does that mean?
It's a lovely word, isn't it? It's just smooth. You know, I feel like Barry White when I say it. So here's the issue with healthcare. The problem is that the data are not represented consistently in different systems. So the way we refer to drugs, lab results, problems, et cetera, is different in different systems. And so if I've got system A and system B with different representations of you physically, I have to bring those data together, find a level of abstraction in effect that allows me to, you know, bring the data together to interpret in aggregate what's really going on with you. That's the harmonization process. And it is by far the most difficult challenge we face. The analytic part of it is interesting and difficult, Mike, but the actual integration of the data is probably the biggest challenge that we face. And so we need data scientists who can do that kind of work too. They're literally pulling files, crunching them together, writing algorithms to bring data together. And then, and only then, once they've done that preparation, can they do effective analysis on
anybody who's done a search in a Word document for a phrase or a word, if the word is misspelled or if the word is mishyphenated or it's not exactly what you type in, you can't find it.
Perfectly said. That's exactly the kind of problem we face with healthcare data.
Okay. This data science and business analytics division at the university, you say, Mark, you take on high-risk, potentially high-reward research that can have great impact. What makes it high-risk research?
For example, there's a cereal manufacturer that realized that 90% of the cost of their product went into the last 10%, making it such that it could receive the good health labels. They didn't want to hire data scientists, build a lab, buy the infrastructure to do the computing analysis. So they gave the data to one of our scientists and said, here's a problem. Can you do something with that? Using cutting-edge techniques, the infrastructure that we have out at the university, this researcher was able to identify some genes that if they took those genes and selected for them in their breeding program, they would cut that 90% cost down by more than half. High risk, not sure we're going to get any results, but high rewards, significant cost reductions. They didn't have to worry about building out the infrastructure, hiring the personnel.
So what are the things, because we have companies, private companies that do this, like Premier, what other things is the university involved in this data science and business analytics division that where you are working with private entities on helping solve their problems?
So a lot of times what we're trying to do is help develop the tools that will eventually be used within the company or industry itself to help solve a specific problem. So, for example, our College of Computing Informatics has a really big visualization center. And so what they try to do is come up with new ways of taking data and representing it and putting it in a way that an individual can look at the data and actually understand what's going on. And so we'll have a company come, say, to that lab and ask, say, we've got a problem. So a financial services company comes and says, we've got a problem that we now are required to, for example, identify potential money laundering operations. Mm-hmm. And we don't have a really good way of we got lots and lots and lots of data, but we don't have a great way of really identifying specific transactions that might be related to money laundering. Our visualization center absolutely went in, helped that financial services company develop tools that would let them graphically identify potential money laundering cases. And so it's developing the tools a lot of times for the industries that we're involved in.
Mike, one of the other projects we have ongoing is with a local retailer. We've talked about using social media almost in the Big Brother type of fashion. But what they're doing is taking social media and mining it to understand how people are feeling about their company and their products. No surprise there. And they're combining it with their internal data. The significant new component here is they're also using it to determine the strategies of their competitors. Simply also by mining what's happening in the social media. What we've done is help them combine these multiple sets of data and provide a visual tool on top so that they can very quickly and rapidly respond to changes out there.
And I get the fact that you have to use this data because it's available, and if you don't use it, your competitor will use it and
absolutely
probably be more successful having done so. If you don't use it, you will fail because you'll be in the dark. But is it a zero-sum game? Because without this information, in the 1800s, we had none of this information.
Right.
And everybody competed on that playing field. If everybody has a ton of information and they're analyzing it as quickly as they can with really good people analyzing it, aren't we back on that level playing field? It's just higher than it was in 200 years ago.
But it's better for society because we're able to – yes, because we can deliver goods and services much more efficiently. You use the example of UPS,
okay,
right? It's millions and millions of – I like to think of it as millions and millions of gallons of fuel that they're not spending. That's better for the environment. That's better for lower shipping costs, lowers the cost of virtually everything we consume.
Getting back to the UPS example, mm-hmm, where they did save 8.4 million gallons of fuel by using big data analysis, saving one daily mile per driver for them saves the company $30 million.
Yeah.
1 mile per driver. If you are successful, and I think you will be, because why wouldn't you be? The money's pouring into the university to do this, and you're successful at doing this. What impact will this have on the university, on this region, on this industry?
We think it's going to have a number of effects. First of all, it's bringing the university's different research centers closer together, and so we're getting a lot more integration than probably we had 5 or 10 years ago. We think it's going to help this region because this region will have a depth of talent that it otherwise would not have. That's going to attract other firms, hopefully like Premier, that will come to the region because we have the ability to deliver the students and the talent to actually perform these jobs.
These are generally high-paying jobs. This is like the banking industry. When we became the second banking center in the country, a lot of people with banking talent, legal people with banking talent, were in Charlotte and not New York.
That's right. And one way of thinking of this is the banking industry as a whole took on big data very, very, very early. Mm-hmm. In some sense, financial services firms are basically big data firms. Mm-hmm. What's happening is all the other industries are now starting to catch up to that. And so you should expect to see transformations in healthcare, retail, energy, like we saw in finance.
One of the components of this course of study at UNC Charlotte, which I think many listeners will be gratified to learn about, is that you're not only training students in analytics and strategy, but also in integrity.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot of concern about Big Brother with this big data stuff. What is it about integrity? How is that part of the conversation?
Well, certainly in virtually every class we talk about, certainly in the courses that deal with sort of the subject matter field. So maybe not in some of the technical courses, but in the subject matter fields, we try to integrate ethics and integrity into basically everything we do. We talk about making sure that you're transparent, making sure that you tell people what you're going to do with the data. And frankly, if you set out policies, make sure you follow them. And so it's really instilling in the students at a very early stage of their development, mm-hmm, that ethics and integrity matter, and that there's something that they've got to live with, you know, really for their entire career.
Because I know you have an ethics department there, or ethic, because I've spoken to one of the professors who teaches ethics. Are they part of the – do they come in and teach courses on what ethical theory and what theories of ethics?
It's certainly the case that within the business school we have Dennis Arnold, who's a professor of business ethics. He certainly informs us in terms of how we design our courses. He doesn't come into every single course that we teach, but it's certainly the case it's something that is – dramatically important to what we do as a business school, and it's incorporated into all of our courses.
So being able to analyze this, getting back to healthcare, for healthcare will help you what? You'll get a bigger picture, a broader picture of populations. If you can collate data and analyze data on areas, you can see where there are outbreaks of cancers.
Yes, that's one aspect. The other is to understand how we're doing at the regional level and the state level. We have a working group now called the North Carolina Health Analytics Working Group that's headed up by one of our distinguished professors, Jim Stanicki. Mm-hmm. And that group is really focused on North Carolina and the region, looking at health analytics, looking at, as we talk about the disparate health systems, trying to make sense of healthcare data and all the disparate data sources we have. So not only can we look at breakouts of different Ebola and other communicable diseases, but we can also look at chronic disease as well.
It's a brave new world and getting scarier. That's Dr. Christopher Blanchett, Associate Dean of Research in the College of Health and Human Services, Dr. Richard Buttermer with the LaBelle College of Business at UNC Charlotte, Mark Armstrong also with the university, and Sean Cassidy with Premier Informatics.
Charlotte Talks with Mike